My name is Michael Blomquist, Councilman Place 2. It is 3 p.m. on Tuesday, March 1st, 2022, and we will call the workshop meeting to order. And the first item is the roll call. So, roll call. Spencer H. Smith, Mayor, is in excused absence. Jennifer McCann, Mayor Pro Tem, has an excused absence. Michael Blomquist, Place 2, is present. Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, Place 3.
Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, Place 3, is present.
Linda Nash, Place 4.
Linda Nash, Place 4, present.
Sam Hallaby, Place 5.
Sam Hallaby, Place 5, present.
City Manager David Mitchell.
City Manager David Mitchell, present.
And City Secretary Julie Helsham.
City Secretary Julie Helsham, present.
All right. We do have a quorum. So we'll move on to agenda item number 2, presentation by citizens. Citizens who desire to address the council on any matter may do so during this item. Please understand that while the council appreciates hearing your comments, state law, Texas Government Code 551.042, prohibits them from 1. Engaging in discussion other than providing a statement of specific factual information or reciting existing city policy, and 2. Taking action other than directing staff to place the matter on a future agenda. Please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. At this time, are there any citizens who desire to present or talk to the council? Anyone? So, noting that there are none, we will move on to agenda item number 3, discussion items. 1. Receive and discuss a presentation on amendments to Statute 150.02, subparagraph J of the Harker Heights Code of Ordinances relating to the 2021 International Fire Code. Fire Chief Sims.
All right. Good afternoon, Council. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and present to you today the update to the 2021 International Fire Codes. I will say that I'm going to turn this over to Deputy Chief Brad Alley. He's the subject matter expert in this arena. But I would also just like to say that this is something that's been working on for many months now, as I know Jerry and Christine are aware, and it's just a lot of time-consuming efforts put into this thing to make sure that we dot all the I's and cross all the T's. So without further ado, I'll turn this over to Chief Alley.
Brad Alley, Fire Marshal for the City of Harker Heights. Thank you all. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about this. Hopefully, y'all were provided with the red line document, had a chance to look through it, review it, so I'm not going to harp on it. There are a number of changes, quite a lengthy document. I have to say, though, that there are less changes in this cycle than there was in the 15 cycle. Most of the things that we had to change in the 15 cycle have been incorporated over the last 6 years to bring it up to the 21. So, as I said before y'all on another meeting, the mobile food vendor, where that was a big amendment for us, it's not a big amendment for us anymore because it's now a permanent chapter in the fire code. Quick overview, chapters 1 and 2 are administrative and definitions. Chapter 3 are your general provisions. That's where your outdoor burning comes in, things like that. 5 through 12 are building design and the features and design fire safe buildings. And then 13 through 19 are reserved at this point. These keep bouncing around and changing. 20 through 40 are special occupancies, and then they're reserved 41, 49, and 52 for future. And then pretty much 50 through 67 is hazmat. And then they go all the way to 80 with it reserved, and that's other references. And then the appendixes. All of section 1 is the creation of the agency. This is where the penalties are established. If you look at 112.4, section 112.4, this is where we actually make fire code violations a misdemeanor. And it sends the penalty phase to a different part of the code. Page 3. Second from top. Chapter 99 is the fire marshal ordinance in our city ordinances, and that's where the fire code violations come out of. So we have to direct the document back over there. We change a number of definitions. I would illustrate the next one down, the ambulatory care facility. We define what that is. There's always been discussion over what that is. And we get to the point, what the code intent was is that if you're unable for self-preservation, then that's kind of where these things kick in. So sedation dentistry actually falls in as an ambulatory care facility because they're sedated to a point. A lot of them are using IV drugs these days. establishes who I am, the fire marshal, who the fire code official is, various different changes along those abilities. Like I said, three is our general provisions. This talks about our open flame cooking devices. That's page 7, that's where that starts. This talks about where we can have recreational fires and chimneys and things like that, but burning the trash and things like that are not prohibited. This is where what are called sky lanterns are prohibited. I don't know if y'all are familiar with those or not, but they're essentially paper bags with a candle that gets hot and floats off and starts a fire somewhere else.
Those are pretty.
Yeah.
We actually had that here in Hinesville. We set them off in 2410 Park. I was out walking, and all of a sudden I said, there's fire in the sky. And there's these floating lanterns up in the sky.
Just floats off and lands somewhere. Nobody knows.
That's not to be confused with the little votive candles they do with the bags along the streets or the driveways.
No, these are actually of a material that it will heat the air hot enough, just like a regular hot air balloon.
And float away.
That they will release them and they will float off. And,
okay.
So they're legal?
No, they are illegal.
They're illegal.
They're pretty, but
I think we lost them. FD came out that night. They did that, and we lost them somewhere between the park and Warriors Path. They went over the neighborhood somewhere over in there, and we lost sight of them over in there. So they're still on fire as they descend.
So. 320 is where we still incorporate our food booths. That's page 8. And so that's where we still maintain that provision. That hadn't caught up yet. So when you talk about 4, you're talking about different areas and systems. 401.9 on page 9 also adds a little bit of teeth to the false alarm ordinance the city has, and it kind of helps backs it up there too. 50321 at the bottom of page 9, you see where we amend the dimension of the fire lane from 20 to 24. And so you're going to see that throughout because there's a number of changes that have to be made to do that. Fire trucks and most DOT vehicles, 10-foot mirror to mirror. So when you're talking about trying to ease past each other, it gets a little tricky sometimes. 5 is also where we do a lot of the fire lane stuff, apparatus access roads. We have address identification in there where we establish the size of the address and how it's visible to the road. This is also where we establish our water supply. I cannot give Mark enough kudos in our water supply because in our world, the ISO inspections that we go through, a minor change to the water supply is a huge change in our ISO rating. And so by us being able to continue with what we have here, these are all legacy amendments that we've been maintaining for some time. So it helps us meet a lot of the really good stuff we get out of it. Six and eight, things like artwork in classrooms. 9 is your sprinkler systems and fire alarms. Those are all the changes for sprinkler systems and fire alarms. It's taken a little bit of time, and I'll talk about it again in a later spot, that last month, February the 20th, was the 19th anniversary of the Station Nightclub fire in Warwick, Rhode Island. 100 people died and 130 injured. That's kind of where the modern codes we go through now. If you were to build that establishment now, the square footage or the occupant load of 100 triggers a fire alarm, or sprinkler system, I'm sorry. And so you can see where we kind of amend 903.2.1.3, because there's always been a little kind of discrepancy in pool halls and billiard halls. When the code talks about those, they're talking about places that just as a gaming establishment, there's no alcohol served. And so you're back to that kind of impairment level possibility. And so we bring that up to say that it has to meet the same as a bar in this aspect.
Does that include the BYB establishments?
No, can't, because it's not an alcohol licensed facility. BYOB is not licensed by TBC. It's just our local ordinances. So
that's something we've requested Hugh Shine's team to take a look at. Are there any controls that can be rolled up underneath TABC for the BYOBs? Because they're, you know, when Governor Abbott, for instance, shut down bars during COVID, BYOBs just ignored that completely because they're not monitored by TABC or not regulated. So they just did their own thing. So they had large gatherings. I know we had one that was during the height of COVID when we really didn't know how COVID was going to impact us. It had maybe as many as 700 people in a club at night. So, that's scary, but there's just no control over that.
It is. I mean, it should be, I mean, regulated under the DAVC. Especially when you have, I mean, anything has anything to do with alcohol consumption. It should be controlled by the DAVC. You know.
I agree.
Me too.
So, there again, like I said, most of nine is fire sprinkler amendments and fire alarm amendments and things like that. Eleven is existing structures. We regulate that in two ways. One through, I'm sorry, page 21. We regulate that through the International Existing Building Code, which building official should talk to you a little bit about what it is. But it's also chapter 11 of the fire code as well. And so that's where it talks about some different things. And one of the things that has kind of come up is that we're talking about sprinkler systems is now retroactively, if a club has an occupancy of 300 or more, then it has to be sprinkled. Mm-hmm.
That's excellent.
So so that's kind of that change. The rest of it is kind of, like I said, just stuff that we have to kind of change. We did add on page 22 at the top, 12031, what I call COPS, critical operations power supplies. Mm-hmm. So things that have to do with the function of government and emergency management, things like that, they have to have emergency power supplies of some sort. A lot of this, they rearranged everything and took things like solar panel fields and some of these other power type things, and they moved all of that to chapter 12. They took it out of all the other places in the code and they moved it to chapter 12. And so that's, you'll see some changes there. But some of these others are required access when we have above ground tanks and things like that. We continue at the bottom of page 22 with 5601. We continue the prohibition of fireworks in the city.
Never seems to work.
Yeah. And then as we go through at the page 23, you'll note where we are not adopting Annex A, J, K, and M. The remainders are. Annex A is the Board of Appeals, and the reason we don't adopt that is because that is handled by our ZBA. And so we, back in one, you'll see where it directs it to. My code directs it to the building code where he made all the amendments, so we maintain it for the consistency. J is building info signs. Some cities adopt that, and you have to put the occupant load of the building, the type of construction, all these different things that matter to the fire department on the front of the building in a large enough way that it's easily identified. K is construction requirements for existing ambulatory care facilities. We don't have any that aren't already up there to that level. And then M is, I don't remember what M was. I honestly can't remember what M was right off the top. D, all you see, the amendments to D, Annex, those go back to where our distances of fire lanes had all changed. All of that had to match up in this annex. And so that's just bringing those same changes into the D annex that we have. Other than that, that's the only annexes we really modified is D. So, any questions I can answer? Anything y'all might have questions about for me?
Fred, I just have one about the fireworks. So if a vendor was trying to do fireworks, could they get an exception to this, or no fireworks ever from no one?
As it stands right now, fireworks are prohibited to possess within the city of Parker Heights. The state law has established that, let's say I drive to Temple, outside of Temple, and I buy fireworks, and I'm on my way through to Cove. That's legal. As long as it's not open and the packages aren't open and things like that, I'm not, you know, that's, you can possess them then, but otherwise they're pretty much illegal in the city of Parker Heights.
This is Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, Place 3. I don't have any questions, but I would say that throughout the years, you have been updating the code, and this looks like it was really thoroughly updated this time around. So is it because we do it every couple of years, we have to update it to make sure it's across the board?
Yeah, we try to stay to the building official. He has an ISO inspection as well. And they kind of start to take a ding if they get more than two cool cycles out. So we try to maintain that. So we run to the 9, we went to 15, now we're at 21. And so we skipped 12 and 18. And so that way we're not hitting the builders and everybody with something every 3 years. There's
sure.
A little bit of, but we still maintain parity with the region and the neighboring cities.
Yeah. And I like the update on the food trucks. That definitely made a difference to the vendors because it's clear and concise. So thank you, Brad. That's
yes,
all
ma'am.
I have. Michael.
Anyone else have any questions? Brad, I have one question as a follow-up. It looks like, you know, a lot of great changes and updates. Was there anything specifically that changed or was updated that we really need to reiterate with the builders, or is it something that it's an ongoing process with them that you interact with them as they start building? Because I know
some of
their...
it comes through in the plan review process.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, Michael Baird, he's done a lot of good job updating them on code changes and things like that. Mine is a little bit behind. We haven't made anything here. It's really that new. That's what I was saying is when we did the 15 codes, I had, it was almost, I think, 40 pages mm-hmm. of amendments. But because of all of those have now been incorporated into the code, mm-hmm. I didn't have to make them, but the builders are already used to those because of the past amendments. Was that clear as mud?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So with builders that are in the midst of building something, are they, and if these new standards are adopted by the council, are they grandfathered with what they started
anything
with the plan?
Anything that the permit was began in, under the 15 codes will be done under the 15 codes.
Okay.
And I guess that's what I'm saying is there's not a whole lot of real significance there. That sprinkler thing I talked about a little bit, it's probably the most significant in the fact that we adopted a firefighter breathing air appendix that we had not adopted before.
Sam?
Sam, please. I'm not sure if it's directed to you, but David, you could help us too in that question about the BYOB. Who we need to direct this to, that question to, for the alcohol?
In terms of trying to get some changes made to it, would be through our state rep. We're going to need the state reps to get involved at Austin to change that so that they fall under TABC, that they are pulled underneath that umbrella.
It has to go through the state, mm-hmm. not the local.
No, the locals try to help us all they can. They really do. I know our chief and them, they've got a great relationship with them, and they try to help us even if they can find some inroads, because if they can find them selling alcohol in there, they can step in if they find them doing that. So they're more than willing to help us when it comes to those things, but they don't just naturally fall underneath them.
Thank you.
All right. If there's no further questions, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Brad. We'll move on to item number two for discussion. Receive and discuss a presentation regarding the current and future of emergency services for the city of Harker Heights. Chief Sims.
Good afternoon again. I promise if we won't be here more than 2 hours. I figure if Christina gets an opportunity to do that, I do too, right?
All right. This time, let the record reflect that Council Member Sam Hallaby has to depart. He's excused.
Thank you.
We'll see you later, Sam.
Take care, Sam. Are you going to advance slides for me? Okay. See if we can coordinate this well. Let me get my notes together.
Hey, Paul, while you're doing that, I just want to kind of put a couple things on the record. Council, you're aware of our situation in terms of revenue with the city. This discussion that we're having here today in terms of our number of calls and where our stations are located and the need for a Station 3 is not a preemptive discussion about building Station 3. Station 3, we still are in the same boat as we discussed at budget times with our revenue shortages that we have due to the DAB exemption. We are not looking at it this time. You know, it's about $1 million roughly, probably a little bit more a year to operate a Station 3. So we're not talking about constructing a Station 3. This is just a data set that the council asked us in past sessions to bring forward so that you understand kind of the stresses that our fire department is under, and as well as understand our response times so that you have a good feel for that. So with that, I'll turn it over to Paul. I just want to make sure I put that on the record.
Good. I wanted to provide a little bit of an overview for you today so you can see what you know, what we're made up of at the Harker Heights Fire Department. We're comprised of 46 personnel between four divisions within the fire department. That's operations, fire inspection, investigation, prevention division, training, and administration. 39 of those 46 personnel are assigned to two frontline fire apparatus that are paramedic level apparatus, as well as two advanced life support system medic units. And those are, thank you very much. Those are positioned between two different fire stations. The first one of those is Central Fire Station, located obviously at 401 Indian Trail. And in that location, we have an engine, a medic unit, battalion chief, brush truck, reserve medic unit, and 21 personnel across the three shifts. Next slide, please. The station two has a Quint. That's a ladder truck in our world, a medic unit, brush truck, a reserve engine, and 18 personnel across the three shifts. Next slide. So we have a response territory within the city limits. I mean, you all know what our city limits is, 15.7 square miles. We have a county response area of approximately 12 miles, and that's a contractual agreement between Bell County and the Harker Heights that's been in existence for, I don't know how long, many, many years. Let's see. Next slide, please. Let me move my slides across here. Calls for service. A calls for service is if we receive an incident that comes across the radio, Harker Heights, medic this, engine that, whatever, that's a call for service. There is an incident number associated with that. When it's a little bit of a historical data here, in 2011, calls for service, we had 620 fire calls, 2,501 EMS calls, a total of 3,121 total calls with 8.5 responses per day in 2011. Next slide. In 2016, we had 733 fire calls, 3,197 EMS calls, a total of 3,930 calls with making that 10.7 responses per day. And move to 2021, we are at 1,711 fire calls, 4,329 EMS calls, total 6,040. 16.5 calls per day. 58% of those come from Central Station and 42% of those from Station 2. Next slide. The call volume over this time frame, 35% increase from 2011 to 2016 and a 48% increase from 2011 to 2021. That's quite an extensive amount of call volume increase during that time frame, and it's felt each and every day. The next slide you see here is our fire district map. This is a map that was created in late 2016 in an effort to identify the districts, but mainly to help us capture data associated with response zones within the city. When we respond into these areas of town, they note these in their incident reports, be it a fire report or be it an EMS report. And let me see, I had some data about that too. I can tell you what the responses have been in those areas. We transitioned to a new reporting system in 2019. So in the old reporting system, there was some difficulties with that. That's one of the reasons we changed. But in 2019, we had 277 responses in District 3. In 20, it was 370. In 21, it was 364. It shows consistency and increases over that time, and certainly a steady number. 64 to 70 is you know, kind of a wash there. Let's see, where are we at? Okay, we're gonna move to the next slide, please. Development, this was a recent discussion at a council meeting. You know, we've got a lot of development that's going on in our city. 2021 data, next slide. There you go. 2021 residential permits were 177 in the city of Harker Heights. 71% of those were in the current Station 2 and proposed Station 3 district. So the lion's share of those. And we all know that the development is taking place out there. There's some potential residential areas that aren't even shown on that map yet because they're not ready. We know there's a potential extension to the Evergreen Estates area. And I believe there's some other subdivisions out there that perhaps you are aware of. So, next slide. Back up. Okay. Y'all took out a slide. Okay, next slide. I wanted to give you a little bit of information. When we capture, or we're trying to determine factors that associate with the identification of a fire station. It's not, we don't throw a dart and say, this is where we're gonna have a fire station. The term of density and distance and deployability or deployment is taken into account from our standpoint that helps us really identify, this is the data set that helps us say, yeah, it's time for a third fire station. So the first one of those is density. 2010 population, 26,700. Density of 1,756 people per square mile. Next slide. 2021, 34,422. That's number based on December 21 economic development information. 2,200 per square mile, 2,200 people per square mile. Density, 20% increase. That is somewhat extensive there. Getting into a little bit of the distance, some of this data comes from much of it comes from assistance of our GIS department and these maps that you'll see here in just a minute. I wanted to say thanks to your team, Christina, for helping us with that process and Daniel and his work. As you see there, approximately 85% of the city is within 4 miles of the central fire station, and remaining 15% is 5 to 7 miles. Approximately 65% of the city is within 0 to 5 minute response time from Central Station, 10% within 7 minutes, and the remaining 25% is 10 minutes or greater. Some of these things will begin to make more sense here in just a minute. There's a slide that's associated with the Station 1 distances. Next slide, please. Station 2, 90% of the city within 4 miles, and remaining 10% is 5 to 7. 75% of the city is within 5 minutes, 10% within 7, and 15% is 10 minutes or greater. Next slide. Again, another map that depicts that for your reference. Next slide, please. The proposed site for Station 3. Let me pause here for a minute. In 2011, there was a consultant hired to help identify some locations, and there were 5 locations identified at that point. And when I came in 16, we really narrowed those down to the one location that you see here, 1761 FM 2410, which is known as our transfer site. It was the optimum location based on response times that provided the greatest number of degree of coverage, and I'll speak to that here a little bit more in just a minute. So as you see, 90% of the city is within 4 miles of this location, and 10% is greater than 5 miles, but less than 7. And 91% of the city is within 0 to 5 minute response times from this location, 8% within 7, and 1%, 10 minutes or greater. Next slide. And then there's your the final product that shows the potential. I'm sorry, that's not the final product. You'll see that in a second. For Station 3. Again, a lot of green. That green's good in that way. And one thing I didn't outline for you, the boundaries of the city are known in the bright red there. You may be able to see that better on your computers. Next slide. So I want to move into some response time comparisons for you. Share a little bit of information here that's not in your packet. We identified 7 locations. All of these are within the station, proposed Station 3 location, and they're listed there, A through G, and you'll be able to see that on your map as well. And I'll go through these real quickly if you don't mind. Welch Cove and Lakeside, this is from Central Fire Station, and I'll read these from Central to Station 2 to Station 3. Welch Cove, Lakeside, 6.3 miles, 15 minutes. Station 2, 5.5 miles, 11 minutes. Station 3, 3.6 miles, 8 minutes. The next one, Highview Lakeside, 6.7 and 13 minutes. 5.9 miles and 9 minutes from 2s. 4 miles and 6 minutes from 3s. You get the gist of things. Mm-hmm. Would you like me to finish that list out?
Yeah, great,
okay.
Chief.
Okay. I do want to point out, because this area right now is where proposed Station 3 is, There's a number of these that are outside of 5-mile response time, and I'll get to more on that here in just a minute. That's a key thing as far as deployability, and it goes back to the distances as well, okay? That's a lot of information there. But just wanted to try to give you some fundamental information on what that is. There is the Hankus A and Hankus B. That's an interesting name. I don't know where that came from, but that's the new subdivision. I believe it's called, it's a pecan something or another out off 2410, the Bobby Whitson property out there. That's a lot closer for Station 3's potential location. Next slide, please. So all stations and proposed Station 3 would cover the city in a 0 to 5 minute response time, 98%. And 2% is within 7 minutes. That, in my experience, that's a phenomenal coverage. So take that as you will. Next slide. And then there's the all-encompassing map that shows you response times, estimated drive times from with all three stations included. And a greater percentage of the city limit boundaries has that darker green covering it, which is fantastic. All right, the next item is deployment. That's the last element in that. We talk about the, there's several things here. Insurance rating is the first one. It is fire station coverage is specifically important here for insurance ratings, public protection classification. That's what it's called, that's its name, PPC also. And it's also known as the insurance service offices. As you heard Chief Alley say a while ago, ISO, you've heard the term. That dictates what your insurance rating is gonna be. So for the city of Harker Heights in 2021, the months leading up to November 2021, we were regraded. We are now a 3.3x. And what that means, if you're within 5 road miles of a fire station and within 1,000 feet of creditable water source, your rating is a 3. If you're outside that if you live within 5 road miles and outside that 1,000 feet, you're a 3X, okay? We have, I don't know how many of our residents in the city are identified as that 3X. I just know based on the mileage, and that would indicate that they could be within a 3X and or, and what's not indicated here, if you're outside 5 road miles but within 7, and within 1,000 feet of a creditable water source, you're a 10W. On the scale, which the ISO scale, 1 being the best rating that you can have and 10 being the worst. So if you're outside that 5 road miles, you could have a rating of 10. I believe that there are probably some of those within the city. I don't know for certain. That's not something that we get access to as far as the data goes. So next, yeah. Yes.
This is Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, Place 3. With that said, since, I mean, this is really important for finances for our homes, and so maybe we could publish something, a small article talking about our rating, and then that way we could go back to our insurance companies and say, hey, this is what we are at, and maybe that can make a difference to save a couple of dollars to our community.
Yeah, I know in the past, I don't know if we've updated it since we got the new one. We put our ISO information on our website, under the fire department's website. We'll make sure that we get that done. Right. And, as, you know, putting some additional information out there.
Sure. I mean, because I never knew anything about this.
And most people don't. So that's it's not uncommon. We do because it's what we do. But yeah. So it's not uncommon to not know that.
That's what I have, Michael. I have a question. So what's a water source that's not credible?
Well, a creditable water source, it's easy for me to answer. You know, okay. Fire hydrant. Our water system, as Chief Alley indicated, it's a superior water system. It's fantastic. You could have a what we call a dry hydrant out there. Mm-hmm. And all that means is that there's a would-be hydrant there with a connection on it that the fire truck can hook up to and siphon water from a water source like a pond, a lake, a pool even. Can be used as a creditable water source. But most of them have to do with, you know, a static water supply, like a pond, a lake of that sort, and certainly fire hydrants. So I don't know what not is, but I do know what is. So, I mean, a ditch full of water does not count towards that. Could it be used? It sure could be. But when I say creditable, that's how they score you. And a lot of volunteer fire departments are bigger departments even that aren't volunteer that have rural areas that don't have fire hydrants. Well, they use a longer hose lay, and they use pumper trucks and tanker tender trucks, as they call them, and they'll push that water up to the wherever it is the source that they're trying to work on, and they have to be graded on that. Mm-hmm. They have to maintain a flow of 250 gallons a minute over a 2-hour period, and it's an extensive process to get there, and thank goodness we don't have to do that. So I hope
Chief,
I answered your question.
I know we've got one hydrant in the ETJ, for instance, that it's on like a 4-inch line that they've used for fuel trucks with, I think, up there. I don't know if they would consider that credible or not, because if you hook to it, it wouldn't work for you to pump off of.
Well, and it has to maintain that 250 gallons a minute or greater, okay? That's another deal. So we have, obviously, as David said, some areas in the ETJ that aren't our water system, if,
right.
Correct me if I'm wrong. And
yeah, that's correct.
Is it usable? It sure is from a field site. And if I were in that position, that's what I would do. As long as I could hook up to it. Yes.
I just want to add on to that. That's some of the discussions we had in a previous action that came before the council when they were asking for the annexation out in the Dog Ridge area, and we couldn't get guarantees on water pressure. So that would probably be a non-credible, I imagine, because
yep.
We can't, you know, guarantee that you're going to get the flow you need to fight your fire, Chief.
Yeah. And there's a lot of water systems out there, private water systems, if you will, that they paint their fire hydrants black, and that's indicative of less than that 250 gallons a minute. Will they provide more than that? Chances are, but it won't necessarily maintain that, you know, depending on time of day and so on and so forth. Could it be a field site? It could be. Any other questions there?
Thank you, Chief.
Okay. Next slide, Arbor, you're there. Again, continuing on the deployment. The planning standard for the fire apparatus response comes directly from NFPA 1710. This is not something that we just make up. This establishes standards for response times, as well as the numbers of personnel that are needed to respond to the specific types of fires, such as residential, commercial, apartment fires, and high-rise structural fires. As for responses, NFPA 1710 is a standard for a 4-minute response for the first due apparatus. What that means is if there's a fire call in Station 2's district, Engine 2 is in the house, Quint 2's in the house, and they have 4 minutes to respond to that as far as the standard is. And then to round out the response level, they have an additional 4 minutes to respond. That's the other units that are coming to that fire, and with a total of 8 minutes for all those units to be on scene for residential fires, commercial, and apartments. And as you see, if it's a high-rise fire, it pushes it out to 10 minutes. We don't have too much of that to deal with here. So there's a lot of things to take into consideration there. Which brings us to the next slide, and that is items to consider for the new potential new station down the road. Land. We own the land, so there's no additional cost for that. Building with equipment and accessories. That's equipment that just goes in there, doesn't count the fire truck and the ambulance. But that's $5 to $6 million. That's about $500 a square foot for about a 12,000 square foot building. A training building that I would like to see that would also be a huge benefit to us, not only in the ISO public protection classification, but it would help us in our training evolutions that also is a component of ISO, as well as could be used by our police department. We would let y'all come play with us, Phil, so. But the image that you see here is what I would be proposing, and estimated about $350,000. Fire truck, $750 with equipment, medic unit, $340 or $375 with equipment, and personnel ongoing cost, total estimates of $7.8 million. And the number of personnel is 18. I thought I had that in this slide. I guess I left.
Oh.
Early on.
Okay. Yeah, 18 people. So, and that's in today's numbers about $1.4 million, and potentially, you know, $50,000 to $100,000 more for the ongoing utilities and so on and so forth. So that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Jacqueline?
I don't have a question, but I do have a thank you. I think that having this fire station is super important. I can't imagine if it took 10 minutes or more for an EMS to get somewhere. When I had to call EMS twice for my dad, by the time I got off the phone with 911 and walked downstairs, they were coming around the corner.
I'm into that.
So they were there, they were extremely professional, and I just can't imagine if I had to wait 10 minutes for someone to come there and see what was going on with them. So I want to thank you for that, and whatever it is, I know this isn't our presentation for us to try to do Fire Station 3, but I'm on board with it. You don't realize how much you need these things until you need these things.
Yeah. I would just like to add, you know, as y'all saw, the responses that we had last year, those are only going to continue to go up. And because we have more of those, many times we're out of district, out of pocket, our ambulances are. And we have mutual aid ambulances come in out of Killeen. So it's taxing on us as well, but we're using more of our neighbors' resources as well. So
Jacqueline.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Michael. This is Jacqueline Sonnenfontaine, Place 3. And the what I have is, Chief, I know that I've seen the calls that you get. I mean, that's a large volume of calls for your EMTs to go out there and do a service. So, and it looks like it's going to be a lot of money for us to get as a new facility. But wouldn't you be able to get in our city maybe another ambulance or another EMT to one of our other, to our main or to our second? Couldn't we do something like that in the meantime? And then once we build the building, they move on to their third station?
And that would be optimum to be able to do that. But to put a third medic unit up, which I'm in favor of, is six people to hire.
Right.
So that's six total. So it'd be two per shift. So
that's something that we can look at. We call it a band-aid fix, right? But it's better than not having reply to that situation.
I would suggest that that's not a band-aid. That's definitely something that would be beneficial, and then they transition like you indicate. So, and we have the ability as far as room to add those people, put them in a working situation. It would take some time to train them because that's six people that we're trying to put on at one time. And if we're trying to put 18 on, that's still a trying deal. And that process in reality takes about 18 months before you can put them in a fire station. You would want to begin to hire them in segments such as that.
Sure.
So that's
something
very possible
for us to look at in the meantime until we get the monies that we could build another facility for you. That would help. That would be something that I would like to see. That's all I have, Michael.
Okay.
Thank you, Chief.
Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to kind of tag along with what Linda was talking about, Chief. For your brief there, you're talking response times. It was mostly you were talking fire. But is it the same standard for the EMS?
Mm-hmm.
So because, you know, for an ambulance call, you know, you don't know if it's a heart attack, stroke, whatever. You know, if it's, you're talking 10 minutes or longer, that's too long. You know, like you said, you don't know until you need it, but when you need it, every second counts in those situations like that. And when you show the graph there with the better coverage there with Fire Station 3, it just shows that, you know, as we grow with the city, you know, your numbers showed the larger call volumes over the years, and our latest census data showed that we were growing at just over 19%, and we're going to continue on that path until we fill up. So the call volumes is going to get larger. You know, there's more and more people. It's not rocket science. You know, as the city grows, we're going to need more and more. And obviously that's a need that's going to be, we're going to have to continue to address.
Yes.
And us being retired military, we do OPs, right? And we know we're going to move the landfill. So maybe that'll be an OP, you know? Stage your ambulances and boom, they get a chance to go and you reduce the time. So there's a lot of ways that we could figure this out, but we just have to want to be able to do something and be a little bit unconventional. when it comes to saving lives. So I'll leave you with that, David.
Anybody else have any questions? Anybody from directors? Citizens? Anyone? Well, thank you, Chief. This has been very enlightening, and it gives us information and puts it on our radar as far as our city grows, we can focus on addressing our growing needs for emergency services, you know, with fire and EMS, and as well as with our police force, because as the city grows, the citizens' needs grow with that, and we need to make sure we address that each year, each budget cycle. We need to look at that and see what we can do to make our city safer and better for our citizens. So, yes, David, do you have anything?
I do not.
All right. If there's no further comments, it is now 3:45, and we are adjourned.